Radio Prague News.
An accident at a rail crossing in Moravia has left two people dead and 13 injured. Five Czech Gripens bound for Iceland have been forced to return to home base due to a technical problem. And police have recovered a stolen oil painting by Jan Preissler, which had been missing for 19 years. Two people were killed and 13 injured when a high-speed Pendolino train collided with a truck at a level crossing at Studenka in the Moravia-Silesia region on Wednesday morning. Three of the injured are reported to be in critical condition. The train travelling from Bohumín to Františkovy Lázně was going at over 100 kilometres an hour when the accident occurred. The truck's engine was found 200 metres from the scene of the crash, and it took the train a full 2 kilometres to come to a stop. According to camera footage, the truck entered the crossing despite the flashing red light and got trapped by the closing gates. The driver, a 50-year-old Polish national, escaped from the vehicle in time and is being questioned by police. He may be charged with endangering public safety. According to a Czech television report, two passenger cars also crossed the track on a red light just ahead of the truck. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and other members of the cabinet have expressed shock over Wednesday's tragic train crash. The Prime Minister, Interior Minister Milan Chovanec, and the Governor of the Moravia-Silesia region, Miroslav Novak, visited the site of the accident shortly after the tragedy. The Prime Minister praised the work of the emergency crews, firefighters and police for their highly professional response to the emergency and the speed with which they had managed to release people trapped in the wreckage. He expressed his condolences to the families of the victims and said the government was ready to offer assistance to those in need. The rail track between Ostrava and Hranice will remain closed for the rest of the day in the wake of the accident. Passengers have been asked to use replacement buses while work on clearing the track is underway. Police and rail inspectors are now at work on the site. The material damage to the Pendolino has been estimated at 80 million crowns. Five Czech Gripen fighter jets, which left for Iceland on Wednesday morning, were forced to return to home base shortly after due to a technical defect on one of the planes, the head of the Chancellor Air Base reported. The flight has been postponed by 24 hours. The Czech Republic is due to patrol the airspace over Iceland for a month in August in place of Canadian airmen who were involved in the fight against the Islamic State. Iceland does not have its own military and its airspace is protected within the NATO Integrated Air and Missile Defence Plan. The police have recovered a stolen oil painting by the Czech painter Jan Preissler, which had been missing for 19 years. The painting, Study for Bathing, assessed at 8 million crowns, was stolen from an exhibition in the town of Chrudim in August of 1996. It was in the ownership of the National Gallery at the time. The police reportedly intercepted a planned sale to a private owner. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The tropical heat wave is expected to last for a few more days with hot and humid weather and day temperatures in the 30s. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the Czech Republic currently has a total ban on drinking and driving, but is that set to change? Given that Karel Schwarzenberg is 77, why is he intent on staying on as leader of Top 09? And we get the lowdown on the commercial real estate market in the Czech Republic in this week's edition of Marketplace. All that's coming up in today's programme. What does the Czech Republic have in common with Afghanistan, the Maldives, Brazil, Armenia and Morocco? An official zero tolerance for drink driving is the answer, but police routinely give some leeway to motorists caught after having had just one drink. Now, a well-respected member of the Upper House of Parliament, the Senate, has proposed that higher alcohol limits bring the country into line with most of the rest of Europe. Chris Johnstone reports.
It's probably a surprise to most visitors to the Czech Republic that the country which prides itself on its beer has a zero drinking driving limit. The Czech Republic stands alongside neighbour Slovakia, Hungary and Romania in the European zero alcohol tolerance camp. The overwhelming majority of European countries, though, have limits of 0.5 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood. That roughly translates into a glass of beer. In practice, though, the Czech zero tolerance exists more in theory. Police regularly turn a blind eye if the breathalyzer test indicates up to 0.3 milligrams of alcohol. And this is one of the reasons why the long-standing Civic Democrat Senator Jaroslav Kubera has tabled a motion calling for the mythical zero tolerance to be scrapped and for the Czech Republic to join the club of countries such as Germany, France, the Netherlands, Belgium and Spain with limits of 0.5 milligrams. Senator Kubera explained his stance to Czech television.
I want to end the Švejk situation where we pretend to the outside world that we have zero tolerance, but in reality that isn't the case. That means that the police measure 0.3 milligrams, then the driver can ask for a blood sample test, and the hospitals, of course, are not often nearby. So it costs a lot of money to take them into hospital, and then the result is that after one beer, there's nothing there. There is the Švejkian counter-argument that if you allow Czechs to have one beer, then they will automatically have two. But we'll get nowhere if we go down that path.
The senator adds that most accidents, and especially serious and fatal accidents, are caused when drivers have consumed at least double the limit that he is now proposing. But Kubera's opponents counter with the argument that his move sends the wrong signals about acceptance of drink driving. And they warn that it's easier to relax the limits than tighten them up afterwards if the experiment fails. Czech media suggests that support for Kubera's move is lukewarm, even within his own centre-right political party. Across Europe, the recent tendency appears for states to tighten their drink driving rules rather than relax them. Scotland, for instance, brought down its limit to fall into line with most other European countries from the relatively high level still in force in England and Wales. But police in England and Wales are calling for the same reduction as in Scotland. Meanwhile, lawmakers at the European Parliament in Brussels are calling for European officials to start drawing up standard drink driving limits across the whole of the EU28, including the Czech Republic. If successful, that might spell the end of Czech zero tolerance, regardless of Senator Kubera's separate proposal.
Thank you for that report, Chris Johnstone. Topo 9 chairman Karel Schwarzenberg has somewhat disappeared from public view in recent times. Despite this and the fact he's now 77, he says he still wants to lead the right-wing party into the next general elections, scheduled for 2017. But what's behind Mr. Schwarzenberg's desire to carry on? There has been speculation recently that Karel Schwarzenberg is planning to step down as chairman of Topo 9, 6 years after he established the conservative grouping. However, in a now rare public appearance, he told Czech television on Tuesday that he aims to remain at the helm for the foreseeable future.
God willing, and if I stay healthy, I want and plan to enter the campaigns both for the regional elections and the elections to the Chamber of Deputies. It's quite amusing to read reports about your own funeral when you don't even have a head cold. So, what can I do?
But given his age and seeming withdrawal from the public eye, why is Mr. Schwarzenberg staying on as Topo 9 chief? That's a question I discussed with political scientist Jiří Peha.
Well, I think Mr. Schwarzenberg's desire to stay on as the leader of Topo 9 is in some ways another piece of evidence that this party, very small and in some ways very elite because it has just a few thousand members and they come from mainly from Prague, is having problems finding a new leader. Schwarzenberg will probably stay on as the leader simply because they have no one to replace him with. And although he will not be doing much for the party in practical terms, His name is still important until the party generates someone who can replace him.
What about Miroslav Kolosek? Isn't he the obvious choice to replace him? I know he's divisive, but he's the party number two, and many people consider him to be, in effect, the real leader.
Miroslav Kolosek is, of course, a very, very skilled politician, probably the best politician in the Czech Republic, if you were to judge him only on his political skills and ability to talk to the media and so on. But at the same time, he's very controversial, and everyone knows that if he becomes the leader of Topo 9, it will give this party a completely new image. It will become much more combative. It will be seen as possibly tied to corruption, because Mr. Kolosek has been for years surrounded by speculations about corrupt behavior. And despite the fact that it may not be true, it would influence the image of the party. So the party knows that it has a very skilled politician in Mr. Kolosek, but at the same time, a politician who certainly doesn't have the same kind of image that can draw, especially what in the Czech Republic is known as the Prague Café circles, to the party. And that is a real problem for Topo 9.
I was talking there to political scientist Jiří Peha. Now, the mushrooming of office blocks and industrial parks and warehouses around the Czech Republic, but especially in the Prague region, is one of the most visible signs of economic transformation over the last 20 years. And one of the closest witnesses of those changes has been Robert McLean, the editor-in-chief of Central and East European Construction and Investment Journal, a publication he helped set up in the mid-1990s. Mr. McLean says the commercial real estate market has clearly bounced back from its recent crisis and appears to be building on more solid foundations. Chris Johnstone asked him first of all to run down how the sector is now faring.
When we talk about the Czech real estate market, by and large, you tend to be talking about the Prague market, at least if we're talking about offices, for example. The Prague office market represents, well over 90%, I think, of the total volume of investment that comes into the country. That market has been doing quite well. However, vacancy with new office or modern office space has climbed up into the teens, up into the high teens. There's fair amount of concern that it could go higher. Right now, developers are in a period of a bit of a boom, basically. I would say it's not as scary as it perhaps was back in 2007, 2008, when there was a lot of different type of developers, some strong, some weak, and everybody's building a lot. There is concern because there's a lot of speculative space being built at the moment, but it's being built by extremely strong, cash-rich developers. And that means that even if it takes a while for these buildings to fill up, so far they're able to handle it, essentially. So it's not the same sort of risk to themselves and to the banks that are lending the money. So in that sense, I would say that's doing quite well. Perhaps the biggest boom at this point, I would say, around the country, Prague and in the regions, as well as the industrial market, by which we mean the warehouse market, warehouse and industrial investments, that's been on a tear just as it has been all over Central Europe. We have major investors coming in, American money, Swedish money. They're hooking up with large industrial development platforms to build basically as much space as the market can handle right now. They've been building quite a bit. They're starting to get into some speculative development as well, but that market, even that seems to be quite rational, the pace at which it's going. You don't have a lot of empty sheds as you did, say, 2008. So that really seems to be, I would say those are the two strongest markets at this point.
And the warehouse construction, that's for specific customers that are waiting to occupy?
Only right now are we starting to see real speculative development whereby developers will build space for occupiers that simply don't exist yet or that haven't declared their interest yet. For the most part, they have been developing pretty much for specific occupiers. Sometimes it's owner-occupier situation. What they're doing at this point is that they may buy some land and build on that, build, say, I don't know, 18,000 square meters for a particular a client, and then leave 2,000, 4,000, maybe 6,000 square meters empty on a speculative basis. So it's being done on a fairly rational basis that way.
And the investors who are coming into the market, are they the same people that were around 5-10 years ago, or are we seeing some sort of change in investors? And are we seeing investors from further afield, perhaps Asia, China, or anywhere else?
Interestingly, I would say the biggest difference at this point is there's a lot of domestic investors. When the foreign investors, by which we mean the people who come in and buy the real estate that's being built, when the foreign investors sort of ran away from the Central Europe, what we found, especially in the Czech Republic, was a lot of domestic investors filling that void. Once prices really had fallen quite a bit, once you had foreign companies that wanted to get out of the market, there were some very strong, very powerful domestic groups that built up the know-how and bought at very good prices. And they were really very strong investors up until about 2013, at which point we started to get a lot of the same old faces coming back, slowly putting their toes in the market, slowly coming back and getting involved in the market. There's a lot of American money coming over now. I think we're finally starting to see some of the typical German open-ended investment funds getting involved in the market as well. There are some newcomers. I would say the American money, as I was saying, is probably one of the biggest new sort of impulses for Central Europe in general, and increasingly in the Czech Republic. As far as China, I don't think there's not really any huge examples of that yet, though I think we did just find out that Bank of China, for example, is going to be opening up in Prague a branch. So we'll see. I think that's still to be continued, that particular story.
And do you see this relative restart or upstart of the market continuing for some time? I mean, it's probably related to the rest of the economy, or are there any factors that could be a break on what's taking place, land or planning rules, anything like that?
I think planning issues, that has been a sore point for a long time. That tends to put a break on the pace of development, which may in some ways be a healthy sort of a handbrake that keeps things from moving too quickly. Developers have been quite frustrated, especially I think office developers have been quite frustrated at how long it takes, and there's been a bit of confusion about how the city actually wants to go about letting new buildings get constructed. But in terms of how long this particular push can go on, I think I would echo what you say. It really depends a lot on the economy. And the potential breaks, the potential problems, I think, are the same ones that we see in the European economy in general. What's going to happen if there's a Grexit? If Greece does fall out of the Eurozone, what's the impact of that going to be? I think last year there was a good deal of fear of what was going to happen in Ukraine. There have been a lot of things hanging over the market. But what I find interesting has been that despite these real concerns, despite fairly major geopolitical or economic events that could come, the market still seems to be moving along, still chugging along. At the end of the day, especially in real estate, it just depends on are people filling the space that's getting built and how much speculative stuff is getting built at any one time. And for the moment, I would say the market is not racing ahead, and there doesn't seem to be any real major concern that it's going to be doing any like severe breaking in the near future.
And is Prague in some way losing out regionally to maybe Warsaw or lagging maybe Bratislava? Is on a regional basis, is Prague performing fairly well?
I would say Prague is running a very strong second, which at the end of the day is probably what it should do. That's probably appropriate given its size, given the size of the market in general, given the size of the economy. Without doubt, Warsaw is the most liquid market in the region. The rest of the region really looks at Warsaw and it to have set the standard. They've really set the bar at what can be accomplished. But Poland just has a whole lot going for it. It's not just that it has a large city in Warsaw, a large capital city with probably 2 million people realistically living around there, and it's a growing environment as well. But it's got major cities around it. You've got several cities, probably 8 cities with over 500,000 people in it, and that creates a sort of momentum of its own. Companies want to go there, not just to get into Warsaw, but because they know that there's business to do in some of the regional towns. And I don't, at this point, I'm not even talking about developers, but there's companies that know that they can get people. At this point, I think the biggest break for Central Europe, the biggest sort of potential hurdle, is just a lack of people, and that's something that Poland's got in abundance. If you have large university towns, investors know, people know, large companies, corporations know they can go in there and get people. And the prices are right. The skills are definitely right. Poland is a major outsourcing market right now. The thing is, that people sort of turn up their nose at outsourcing. This is not just accounting jobs. This is getting educated young people into sort of a working frame of mind. They're completing their training by becoming quite proficient in sort of the language and the culture of business, and the country is simply producing a lot of them. The Czech Republic, I would say, one of the biggest problems it has right now is just getting enough pockets of labor, of skilled labor at one point, because there's been a lot of investment here. It's been a very positive story, but it can only go as far as there are people, because at that point, the price of labor starts going up and it becomes more difficult, less efficient to invest here.
And is there room, do you think, for some of the cities outside Prague to develop a lot more? I mean, Brno is fairly, fairly well developed, but it's maybe some of the others, Liberec, Pilsen, Ostrava, Olomouc, some of these. Is there any room at all for these to, in some way, take any of the overspill of Prague, if there is an overspill?
It really comes down to numbers, I would say, and universities. Those are, when you talk to investors and when you talk to people who look at these things from an analytic point of view, it really comes down to where do you get a few hundred thousand people, where do you get traditions of education. Towns like Ostrava definitely have a chance, in part because there's that entire agglomeration of southern Silesia as well. So Ostrava has a chance. There's a lot left to be done there. It's a long way to get there, but they have an airport there. They have a fast train that goes there. Brno's doing quite well, I would say. There's a very strong technology park. Both cases, the cities are really behind trying to drive growth, and that's very positive. I would say the same is the case with Pilsen, but it's simply going to come down to a game of numbers to a certain extent.
And you mentioned the American investment. Is there any specific reason why this American investment?
I think what was interesting was probably two and a half years ago, we were getting really strong signals that Americans simply believed in Europe, and especially in Central Europe, that there's a lot to be done there. And if anything, they were more positive than the Europeans themselves about it. They saw the market as being down. They saw the long-term figures as being positive for it to get involved in the market then, and they simply did it. They did it in bulk, and they really did come over and create platforms and ways of investing in the market.
Journalist Robert McLean, who is talking there to Chris Johnston for this week's edition of Marketplace. If you've got any comments about today's programme, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or even via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.